right, welcome into the Hall of Lame podcast, episode 8, I believe. I'm Trey Benson. I'm joined by my good friend, Jason Melia. How you doing, Jason?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Pretty good. I mean, got to watch some XFL games this weekend, just a little bit, just a little touch here and there. You know, they're on the TV now. You can actually watch them. And then got to catch a minor league hockey game with Jackie on the weekend as well. So it was eventful. Didn't get much work done, which is a bad thing. I don't know. How's your weekend?
You know, it's a depressing post Valentine's Day weekend for me. Yeah, my brother's visiting.
How's that turn out for you? Are you still on Tinder?
You know it, baby.
All right. Well, maybe we'll get some more updates from Jason's love life later on as the season goes on.
It's week 15 in the Jason's love life. Still nothing.
I don't know. You said you got some strange in college, so I just never saw the girl hang around.
Yeah. That apartment was very desert-like, but that dorm room.
Oh, is smelling up in that dorm room?
All right. Let's move on, man. This is a sports podcast. I don't want to get into this.
All right. Too much personal life for Jason and his liking. Yep. All right. We'll jump into the rewind. So XFL got to week 2. It hasn't imploded yet. It's still going strong. I actually caught a bit of the Seattle Dragons game against, who are they playing? The Tampa Bay Vipers. The Dragons won that game 17-9. There's some good plays. I mean, the offense, it's not the greatest in the world on the Dragons side. Their quarterback, I think his name is Silvers, underthrows a lot of his receivers, but I mean, that's kind of expected. But there was a really great play. I don't know if you saw that tweet I sent out of the defender, the DN, like played this pass perfectly and just took the ball out of the air, didn't even juggle it, and had a pick six. Like, it was the quickest pick six I've seen, like, this year and last year in football in general.
I did not see it. I want to get into it. I really do. I think it's going to be really cool to see the new rules. I haven't really dived into it too much yet, but, like, diving into the stories, I think they should really lean into some of these stories because a lot of these guys are getting, like, their second or third chances at playing professional football and stuff like that, including the coaches. I think if the XFL, like Vince McMahon, yeah, he got to lean into the stories. I think that's something he's really good at, marketing and everything like that. If they lean into the stories of the players and like really emphasize the fun rules, I think it could be really fun. I don't know. I haven't dived into it too much. It just seems like it's getting its legs. I know on social media it's pretty funny, and how the teams interact with their audience is pretty fun, what I've seen. But I haven't watched very many games, so I've tangentially seen like a few plays. That's it.
All right. Well, if you're going to watch a player or a team, probably tune into the Dragons. They're entertaining, to say the least. There's a lot of that guys on that team. Keenan Reynolds, I think he was on the Seahawks at some point, but he never really stuck around on the team. He might have been on the practice squad, but he's a starting receiver for them. He had a pretty good play in that game. I think he had like a 60-yard touchdown or something. And another guy floating around, I just saw him on one of the games while I was at a bar this weekend. Christine Michael, you remember him?
Christine Michael, yeah, fucking muscle hamster.
I think he plays Jack. For the Defenders. He plays on one of these XFL teams. I just saw him, and I was like, oh, shit. Christine Michael Sr. And so there's a lot of that guys like floating around. One person you should watch if you're ever going to tune in, the Houston Roughnecks have a quarterback named PJ Walker. I don't know if you've seen any highlights of his yet, but he's actually a pretty exciting quarterback. He makes pretty great plays. Reminds me of a little bit of Russell Wilson, the way he moves around the pocket. We'll get into his performance this week later. Another storyline that kind of floated up in the XFL was Tim Tebow was asked if he was contacted by the XFL. He says there were some conversations, but he has no interest at this time because he's still pursuing that MLB dream. I don't know. I don't follow the MLB too closely, but from past years, I just know he's never really stuck on a squad. So I don't know if you want to go into that more.
It just seems like a weird thing for Tim Tebow to be like, no, I'm going to hit like maybe 200 in minor league baseball. It just seems like he gave it a shot. I mean, he's probably like under contract maybe. That's why he can't do it at the moment. And he just doesn't want to like throw the team under the bus. So that's probably the most realistic scenario is that he's under contract with the Mets and as a minor league player. But it seems like such a fun opportunity for Tim Tebow to get back into it. But he's also like a lot older than we think he is. Like, let me look up his age real quick. But like, it would be so much fun and so much hype going around Tim Tebow if he joined the league again. Yeah, he's 32 years old, which is kind of old, but he's also not been playing football for like, 5 years? More than that, maybe? 5 years, so maybe he has fresh legs under him. It'd just be like so much. I can just imagine the ESPN cycle around him when everyone's talking about him coming to the XFL.
Yeah, he'd probably bring a lot of attention to the XFL. I don't know if he'd ever take that performance and whatever he does in the XFL and turn that into an NFL roster spot, but it probably wouldn't be worth it. I hope he plays. I mean, I guess he's kind of interesting. I don't know what he can do at this point in his career with his physical abilities, but yeah, I just
play tight end.
Oh yeah, he was like the Swiss Army knife before they came into the league. What's his face on the Saints, the backup quarterback? He could have been like him.
Taysom Hill.
Yeah, he could have been like Taysom Hill. Other news, the MLB players all over the league are just taking their shots at the Astros for cheating. I didn't look too deep into the story. I just maybe saw an article here and there. Astros were stealing the signals from the pitcher and the catcher, I think. Can you elaborate more on this? I couldn't really catch it.
Yeah, you essentially got it right. So the Astros got busted for an investigation they did in 2018 that they were stealing signals. Some reports say it was a buzzer, like they had a buzzer under their jersey and it would buzz every time like there's an off-speed pitch. There's been a lot of stories around it. It's probably the biggest scandal since like the steroid era for the MLB. The MLB isn't immune to controversy, but it's a pretty big deal and the commissioner has not punished the Astros very much or as much as they think. And some people are speculating that it's because a lot of other teams were doing this and the Astros were just the only ones to get caught. And the commissioner is taking no responsibility. The way the Astros have handled this, because like they called out specific players that were doing this and the Astros have the bright idea of having the players in question answer the questions of the media after they were proven guilty. And it's just an absolute shit show. And there's like all-stars and MVP winners on the Astro team that now everything's in question. They won the World Series that year. And it's just a big shit show. And all these kinds of pitchers and batters are all calling them out. It actually makes me a little more interested to get back into MLB to see how that's going to play out. But it's just an absolute nightmare for the MLB, which is also like, already a dying sport. So
yeah, it's fun. It's just funny just getting their nipples buzzed by whatever and then that leads to hitting success. That's why my big takeaway from this.
That is, there was a pitcher who sent out a tweet. I don't know how much like emphasis you want to put on it, but he said he would rather have people take steroids than know what pitches he's coming up with. Because a lot of pitching is just like surprising the batter with an off-speed pitch. Hitting an off-speed pitch, if someone throws fucking heat and throw it for strikes, is like one of the hardest fucking things to do in sports. And it keeps like really good pitchers pitching for a very long time. So like I totally understand it. And like when you're putting steroids and nipple buzzers on the same level, and it might seem trivial to like someone who doesn't watch baseball, but like, or has played baseball, it's incredibly a huge advantage if you know when the off-speed pitch is coming, because you can like wait for it and stuff like that. It's a big advantage.
All right, all right. Moving on to the NBA, Kyrie Irving has been elected as the VP of the NBA Players Association, replacing Pau Gasol. So I don't know. I just found this pretty interesting, especially if all the stories that have been floating around Kyrie Irving the past few years of just the interesting type of guy he is. It's a pretty prestigious position, I believe. I'm not exactly sure what the responsibilities are and what he can manage and what he does there, but I could probably look into it more.
Yeah, I mean, like, Chris Paul was part of that head decision making for the Players Association. It just seems like a lot of the stories behind Kyrie, it seems like an odd pick when there's so many other players you could choose from, and especially with all the stories around him. But maybe he's a smart guy. He seems like a smart guy who just like believes in some really, really crazy stuff and like talks about opening your fourth eye and stuff like that. Like his shoes are like imbued with the third eye iconography. Like the soles of his shoes are all eyeballs and stuff like that. It just seems like he's very conspiratorial and like in touch with his spirituality and not like strictly speaking intellectual or someone that is on the forefront of advocating for player rights and wages. It just seems weird.
I got a hot take for you from Kendrick Perkins, a former player. He spoke on Kyrie Irving. Kyrie Irving didn't want to play for this franchise. He's talking about the Celtics. Every time I think of that guy, I want to throw up. Kendrick Perkins on Kyrie Irving. That was it. So I don't know how players across the league are receiving this, so we'll see.
Yeah, if I start taking advice from Big Baby, I'm going to just throw myself off the bridge, right? He has some really terrible takes.
he's coming full heat, bringing it.
He's always bringing it.
Before the All-Star break, the Blazers, I think they were playing the Memphis Grizzlies, and Dame injured his quad. He was predicted to be out 1 to 2 weeks after that point, and he was going to be in the All-Star game this weekend, but he had to miss it due to that quad injury. And I don't know, you want to talk about the Blazers just for a quick second and maybe their chances of making an eighth seed are slipping before our eyes if they can just get healthy, man. I mean, this is obviously a big hit. Dame was producing like almost 50% of our offense, just assist and scoring wise. So it's a big blow, and maybe CJ can step up and carry them to a few wins, but it's going to be rough for the next like week or so until Dame gets back.
Yeah. CJ's not a spitting image of really good health. I think Damian Lillard, if you go through every season he's been with us, he's not missed more than 10 games. And he's been very, very healthy for his entire career. I don't think he's going to be out that long. I don't actually know the extent of his groin injury. But without Dame throwing up 40 points a game, we stand almost zero chance against a good team, and let alone like a middling team like the Spurs or something like that. It's obviously not very good. I don't think CJ can supplement the amount of points that Dame can contribute. And even if we make the playoffs this year, and like Dame said earlier, he had a quote where he believes that we're the last team anyone wants to see in playoffs in round one. And in theory, he could be technically correct because how clutch we are. And like if our around that time, our team is expected to be healthy in quotation marks. But even with Nurk back, he hasn't played for an entire year. So he's trying to recover as best as possible. And the only way to do that is to rest and not work out and stuff like that. So even when he's back, he's not going to be himself. And Collins, I like Collins. He plays good defense and stuff like that. And he can shoot a three. He's still very young and very inexperienced. You can see it a lot. And he's not going to be playing crunch time for us, especially at the center position. So even with like some of our best players coming back and being healthy, it's not looking great.
Yeah, I think one bright spot is maybe we get to see more of Anfernee Simons step up into that either point guard or shooting guard role, and he's probably going to get asked a whole lot more of him in the coming weeks or week that Damian Lillard is out. So hopefully he can show his promise that he's shown in a few games. I know he dropped like 32 points or something like that in the very last game of last season when he started. So maybe you can find that spark again, and maybe we can find a reliable scorer coming off the bench for us.
Yeah, getting the young players like minutes is going to be pretty cool to see. And it's going to be the reason why I'm tuning in, not watching CJ maybe shooting like 20 shots a game because he has to. It's going to be watching those young players develop like Nazir Little and Anfernee.
All right, let's jump into the topic of the week. The NBA All-Star Weekend. It was actually pretty good this year. I usually don't tune in too often. I just try to watch some of the highlights and maybe the dunk contest and the three-point challenge if Dame or CJ aren't it. But this year was pretty interesting. We had Team World versus Team USA. USA took it. The MVP of that game was Miles Bridges. Ja Morant and Zion got to share the floor for a few moments of the game, and they were pretty exciting. They had some great assists to each other. Zion was just yamming home dimes from Ja Morant, and I don't know, that'd be an exciting pair if they ever got together on the same team. And probably the best moment of the game was during the closing of the half. Luka Doncic took this half-court heave, and Trae Young was standing like right beside him, and the heave was probably in the air for probably like 3 or 4 seconds, and swoosh, and the whole crowd went crazy. It wasn't even like a big play, but it was just, the moment was ridiculous. And there's a great like gif of Luka and Trae Young looking at the ball as it's sailing in, and their reaction is just priceless. And I don't know, I just thought that was the best moment of that game.
Yeah, and Trae Young got Luka back in the All-Star game later. he hit a half quarter.
Yeah, he took his own half court shot. Moving on, we'll go to the skills challenge. The big men showdown with Bam Adebayo versus Baby Sabonis from the Pacers. Bam Adebayo won this. The skills challenge isn't like super crazy. It's like dribble, do a couple crossovers around these cones standing there, one pass, layup, take it to their court, dunk or layup, and then you get asked to shoot a three, and you're just supposed to do that as fast as possible. So it's not super entertaining. It does show how versatile like the big men are in this day and age. I don't know who else was in there, but it's surprising that no guard was able to top Bam Adebayo and Baby Sabonis. So
yeah, it was fun to watch those big men just destroy the guards that are supposedly like the guard position is, I mean, the skills challenge is almost reserved for guards at this point, but like in past skills challenges, it is cool to see those big guys like, and how the NBA is changing from maybe a little leaned a little too heavy on the Curry, all small guards and they're all really good and all we have to do is do small ball and stuff like that, and having these 6'10 forwards just destroy them in the skills challenge. It, like you said, not very interesting, but it's cool to see Bam Adebayo, who's 6'9, 6'10, win it. It's kind of cool and funny.
The three-point competition. This saw Buddy Hield. He activated his clutch gene and hit his last money ball to top Devin Booker, 27-26. It was actually pretty cool. They kind of had Devin Booker pop up on the screen while Buddy Hield approached his last rack. I think he was sitting at like 19, so he had to hit almost all of his money balls, or 4 out of 5 money balls on the corner rack. And like, he hit 3 in a row, and then he just needed one more, missed the fourth. And then the last one, he got it up, and then like Devin Booker's like looking at it, and then yeah, swoosh, and pretty entertaining. Devin Booker, that was probably his one moment to shine this weekend. He didn't do too hot in the All-Star game.
Yeah, and it's just so sad that Devin Booker was there. I don't if I got gypped for the All-Star game for like Chris Paul or something like that, and you're putting up close to 30 points, or I don't know if Devin Booker is putting up 30 points or not, but he's up there in points scored, and he gets gypped for the All-Star game, but he has to compete in the three-point contest. And he competed in the All-Star game too, but It's just because Dame was hurt. It was just kind of sad that Buddy Hield took his only accolade away from him from All Star Weekend, and he did the 3-point contest really well. It was really entertaining, and for Buddy Hield to hit that last shot was just the icing on top for his miserable weekend.
Yep. So the dunk contest was the last event of that night, and it saw Aaron Gordon from the Orlando Magic versus Derek Jones Jr. from the Miami Heat goes toe-to-toe in the last round, and they both had pretty impressive opening rounds to get there, and then they followed that up with both of them had two straight 50s, which is controversial on the 50-point scale now with everything, but then it had to go to one last dunk, and Derek Jones Jr. did it from the free throw line, like one step in, windmill jam. It was very smooth and pretty graceful, and he got a 50 for that. But our man, Aaron Gordon, jumped over Taco Fall. If you don't know who Taco Fall is, he plays on the Celtics sometimes. He probably comes in for some bench heat checks and just drives the crowd wild. But he's like a skyscraper. I think he's like 7'7" or something ridiculous like that.
7'5", yeah. He's the tallest guy in the NBA, I think.
He's pretty comical. Just, I mean, I respect him to be tall, but it's just, I think that's why he's there, is because he's tall in the NBA.
Yeah, essentially. He played at UCF, and he was just a lovable, really tall kid. So just a quiet giant, and just, he's not meme to death, but he's just like really hard to root against him. He's just kind of charismatic. And he's just out there because he's tall, like you said.
Is this going to be his biggest highlight of his year? Him being dunked over by Aaron Gordon. Probably most showtime he's going to get.
Likely. And I thought he was going to get hurt. I was like, this is actually a really hard dunk. When they were doing it, when they called Taco Fall out, I was watching it live. I was like, this is kind of funny. It's also actually really difficult, like 7'5". And you're gonna try to jump over him, like, and clear him. Like, I thought Taco Fall was getting a concussion with like a knee to the back of the head for sure. And like everybody was egging him on to do it. And Aaron Gordon looked way too confident to be doing this. I was like, this could go really well or really, really poorly.
I gotta shout out Aaron Gordon's dunk from Markel Fultz off the side of the backboard. He did this sweet like spinning one hand windmilled. That was probably the best dunk of the night that I saw.
Yeah, it's weird. The scoring system is so messed up because whoever goes first, like let's say you're a judge and someone has a pretty good dunk, like, and you have to give it a 50, everyone's kind of going wild or whatever. And then the second person does their dunk and it was just objectively better than the other one, but you can't go above 50 and like and give him like more points. Like, if they both had good dunks and they both deserved a 50, but the second dunk was obviously better, you're getting screwed over. It just seems like the scoring format's like really weird. But I'm also talking about the dunk competition, and I shouldn't care about this much, but it does seem kind of crazy that Aaron Gordon lost this competition to Derek Jones, who did like the same dunk 3 times in a row.
Oh man, trashing Derek Jones. He had a lot on the line. He was talking with the Puma. He was wearing Pumas out there, and I guess he had a deal in the making. And right after he won the slam dunk competition, they offered him a full deal. So it's good for Derek Jones to get his shoe deal. You know, a lot of people rocking Pumas these days, right?
Yeah, I guess so. He can do those crazy in-game dunks in those Pumas. I guess him and Usain Bolt, and I can't name you another Puma athlete. What do they call him? Pathletes.
I kind of like that. I don't know what the Puma athlete. There is no nickname for them.
Yeah, they just made bad shoes.
You don't like their? I think their logo is cool. That's the one thing I like about them.
Yeah, but they never use it. It's just like it looks like the band's logo. It's kind of like a lines on the side of it. If you've ever seen a Puma, like they don't use their logo like Nike does, which is just kind of fits in a shoe, or like Adidas. It's just like lines. like Vans have just like those
I thought
lines.
they had a like a lion. They thought they had a
It,
puma.
it they they use the puma, like it's on their thing, but like on the side of their shoe, there's not a puma on there usually. You know what I mean? Like Nike has the swoosh on the side of the shoe, like every shoe they have, or Adidas with the stripes on the side. It's not like that. They just do like stripes on the side. They don't use like the puma in a cool way on the side of the shoe. It's just their logo.
So in your opinion, do you think Aaron Gordon was robbed?
Yes, I think he was. Like, he had the best dunks, the most entertaining dunks. Like, the Zach LaVine one, like, it could be a toss-up. Like, Zach LaVine's really good at dunks. And Derek Jones just had no creativity either. Like, his dunks were just, I don't know, impressive. But he did the same dunk, like, three times. And they still gave him 50s for it.
I think
he just
maybe
did
the
it from
main
different angles.
The main separator was that Jones Jr. did all his dunks on the first try, I think. And Aaron didn't on, I think it was the Taco Fall one. He had to do it twice.
Yeah. They have to institute a rule. If you like whip the first dunk, then it's automatically a point like off of all the judges. Like the next time, like if you make it the next time, the judges can only give you a 9 if you miss the first dunk the first time.
Pretty good contest. I mean, I would usually want to see like bigger stars in the dunk contest, because back in the day, like that's where the big all stars actually went to the dunk contest. Like I never really got to see him in person on like TV or whatnot. But you know, you had like Wilkins versus Michael Jordan, and I know those were some crazy dunk competitions. And Kobe Bryant was in it. We never got to see LeBron James freaking do a dunk contest. I don't know why he couldn't do it when his like first or second year in the league. But kind of,
yeah, I don't know. I don't know either. Maybe because he was in the All-Star game and like the Cavaliers were just like, you can compete in the All-Star game, but not in the dunk competition, because that's a little bit too much injury risk they were willing to
take.
Oh
my God. When's the last time someone got injured in the dunk contest?
Hey, there's it only takes one time, but I guarantee that's what it is.
The only time I thought maybe Blake Griffin was going to get like hit by the car when he was jumping over it.
He was going to land on the hood of the car and slip and hit his head.
Did you watch the whole dunk contest?
Yeah, I did. And I thought like, if you come with like creative ideas, I think that should count more. Like Pat Connaughton had the most creativity of the dunks. Maybe he wasn't like his second dunk wasn't that great, and it wasn't. Objectively, because it took him a few times to jump over Giannis to do his like pretty mediocre
he jumped
dunk
over Giannis
in the second round. Yeah, but on the first round he had he did the white man can't jump get up on. I was like, that's easily alongside Aaron Gordon's windmill 360 dunk. That's probably the most entertaining dunk, because just like the presentation of it, it wasn't like super impressive, but like it was just fun to see. And everything else was just, oh, Derek Jones doing a between the legs dunk, and he did that three times in a row and got 50s on all of them. It's like, I don't know. They should just play with the format, I guess.
Well, that's like his one skill. Like, I don't watch the Heat too often, but I know whenever I see a highlight of Derek Jones, it's just a dunk, and I'm not sure he gets much playing time.
Yeah,
he's coming to dunk the ball.
He's like one of the best in-game dunkers since like Westbrook and like Blake Griffin. Like his in-game dunks are crazy. I see why he was in there, but his in-game dunks are just disgusting.
How did Dwight Howard do?
He's just an old man. He just looks very like always. He just looks very stiff out there, but he's like 20 years old, like 10 years older than when he did it the first time. So it wasn't very agitating. He did like his first dunk was so underwhelming. Like he missed it the first time. He like jumped up and he turned his back to the basket and put his arms out like across and then turned around and dunked it. And it was just like very underwhelming because he like missed a pretty underwhelming dunk the first time. It was just like, what are we doing here? And he had like all the get up. Yeah.
Oh, he had the costume.
Up. He had the Superman thing, and it was like a kind of a sweet thing because he had that Superman seal on his chest, and then he ripped like the top piece off, and it was like a 24 for Kobe and the Superman thing. So that was kind of cool. But like, yeah, his dunks weren't very impressive. No, not at all. Like, he's not bringing out another like 12-foot, like not 12-foot, but like 18-foot hoop to dunk on or whatever this time, and like dunk jumping over people like he did with Nate Robinson.
Yeah, I was about to bring that up. That's probably one of my favorite memories of the dunk contest, is when Dwight Howard got under the basket and Nate Robinson had that kryptonite get up on. I think did that, like, dim the lights and it like glowed, and he dunked over Dwight Howard. And for those that don't know, Nate Robinson is like, I think he's 5'10", and he's probably one of the more electric dunkers of all time. And that was probably one of my favorite memories.
Yeah, he's like our Spud Webb.
Yeah, he's like popped up here and there. I don't know what he's doing now. I haven't seen him for a while.
Yeah, he's out of the league now. I think his last stop was like with the Nuggets or something like that, and he stopped playing. He made his money. I don't know. He's living life. You know what I mean? He's doing Nate Robinson things.
All right, let's get to the main event, the All-Star Game. It was a clash between Team LeBron and Team Giannis. They both get to draft their players, and then they get to show up and win the big monies for their charities that they get to pick out. It was a really interesting game this year because they made quite a few changes to the format. I think each quarter represented like $100,000 or something like that. I'm not too sure on that. But then once you get to the fourth quarter, it was deadlocked at a target score and there was no time limit. And that definitely changed things.
Yeah, so I forget the name of it. I was trying to look it up, but it's a specific name for the rule changes. And I thought it was really entertaining. It's a cool idea where every game has to have a game-winning shot. So you're basically playing to an amount of points. So it's like 120 is like usually it. And the way they format is to even make it to the third or the last quarter, you have to win. You have to be tied essentially through two quarters, and you like win points based on the quarter. So a game could end relatively early or be extended pretty late. I don't think this rule change is gonna permeate its way into like the actual NBA regular season. I think that's a fucking long shot. But
was that proposed that it'd go to the regular season?
Well, like not really, but it does sound like they're trying to do crazy stuff. Like, there was rumors about the mid-season tournament.
Yeah, I like that.
I don't know if you... That's a pretty wacky idea. But they might institute this during Summer League, and that could be pretty fun. It'll make the Summer League even more entertaining, which is also, like, a bucket list thing that we should do, is go down for Summer League. I think that would be really fun.
Oh, yeah.
Because it seems like a pretty cheap thing to do. Like, it doesn't seem like a crazy expensive venture, but, like, so much fun to go to.
Yeah, Adam Silver's got some good ideas. He's just trying to get the NBA even more money, start filling up those pockets. But I liked another idea that was floating around, if you haven't heard of it, was the play-in games at the end of the season. So, like, the 7-8 seed would play the 9-10 seed for those seeds. And it would just be one game to get to the playoff spot.
Oh, to get to the eighth seed?
One idea that was proposed is like the seventh and eighth seed get to choose their opponent, or so the seventh seed basically get to choose their opponent, and then you basically just play one game at their home court. So like 7-8 get home court, and it's just one game though. And then whoever wins that gets the seventh or eighth seed out of those winners.
Ooh, and you could have the All-Star game like rules where you, and I forget the name of it, but where you have to score to like 120 points first in but like this is all like theoretical. Like, what if that was it? Like, that was the game you had to play, that one elimination game for the seventh and eighth seed, and that could be really interesting.
Well, they've also changed those rules for This is kind of like getting way off topic from the All-Star game, but just to quickly getting like just touching on a little bit, they've already changed some of those rules for the draft lottery. So it's like you can't really super tank anymore. Like you're not guaranteed high odds for the first overall pick, because you already saw that last year when they implemented that rule. Whatever team won the first overall pick, and I think New Orleans, like they all had like even odds or something like that. So like it's de-incentivized the need to tank. So like you're not guaranteed the number one overall pick.
I think it's like the top four, the worst four teams have equal opportunity to get that number one pick. Yeah.
I actually think it's something that the NFL should look into, because I don't think the worst team every year should get the number one overall pick.
Yeah, but the NFL is a little different, where there's a lot of turnover, and there's like just having the number one overall pick isn't going to make your team good. It's definitely more of a team sport than like the NBA, Jesus Christ, the NBA, where if I get a Zion, I'm all automatically like a decent team. Like I'm in the playoff hunt already with just one player swing. Where if I get like, even if Cincinnati Bengals, they get Joe Burrow, they're not going to be an automatic playoff team. Like you need a good O-line, you need some good receivers now that AJ Green is leaving and stuff like that. Like it's definitely like a different sport, and I understand why they have that rule there, but yeah.
All right, let's rein it back in. We went off on there on a big old tangent. We were talking about the All-Star game, and we got to Adam Silver and went off from there. But so All-Star game, I think Team LeBron took I'll cover it real quick. Team LeBron took the first quarter, and then Team Giannis took the second quarter. And there's a few pretty good plays. Highlights are usually pretty entertaining because you got the best players on the floor, obviously. Probably the person that was playing the hardest was Kawhi Leonard, and we'll talk about him later. And I think the third quarter was actually a tie. I don't know off the top of my head, but the fourth quarter is where that rule change we discussed came into play. So essentially, they took their scores from the third quarter, and both teams had to get to 157 to win the game. So, and then there was no time limit on it. I think one thing I saw that was pretty funny was that it was 45 minutes of actual time. That's how long the fourth quarter took, because
it was very long.
Yeah, it got to like extremely scrappy, and it was a lot of people are saying it's the most entertaining because the players actually tried, and it seemed like everybody was playing defense and they wanted to win. Like usually in past years, we see usually a team pulls away and it's just like, oh yeah, let's just do crazy dunks now and not really care. But no, this year it was like people were getting feisty. LeBron was complaining to refs. Lowry's out here taking charges. This is the first time I've seen some defense in a while.
Yeah, it's a combination of a bunch of things. The format, and I think the fact that it is so close to Kobe's passing away, and Kobe like always played hard in these All-Star games. Like he always played hard in these games for the most part. Maybe not towards the end of his career, but like he definitely tried during a lot of these All-Star games, and he won a bunch of All-Star MVPs. And we'll get into like them naming the trophy after him. But if you think about the format of how this game goes, fouls matter a whole lot at the end of the game. Like the game was ended on free throws, so you can already tell like the reason why these players were so upset at the refs and poor refs, because essentially for three quarters of the game they're just doing a dunk contest and no one's playing defense at all and no one cares. They're just throwing the ball up, getting turnovers. No one's playing like. No one's trying to block a shot, and they're just going into the lanes and dunking and missing dunks. And then the fourth quarter turns, and like the refs have to put on their playoff game faces on and start really reffing. And you have like James Harden screaming in your face and stuff like that. Poor refs. It's such a weird fucking dynamic to be in at that point.
Yeah. I actually watched the fourth quarter a good bit, And yeah, it was pretty scrappy and dirty basketball. A lot of missed shots, a lot of bad shots. LeBron took like a half quarter for no reason. I thought was pretty funny. I think he was going for like, just make this shot and he can blow up and everybody would go wild. But it was just a bad shot.
Yeah, there's a lot of key moments. Like they challenged a call and LeBron got the ball back. And immediately after that call, LeBron takes a half court shot to like end the game. I was like, yeah, what's going on?
He was not great from the 3-point line. I think he was like 2 of 10. So I don't, but I don't know. He's just feeling
Giannis,
it.
Giannis had a crazy dunk on LeBron.
Yeah, Giannis that was like reviewed. Going hard.
That review was like crazy because I honestly don't know if it was goaltending or not. It just like bounced off the back of the backboard. It was pretty fun to watch.
I like that they called it a block because it kind of extended the game. It was kind of controversial. I think it might have been a goaltend, but it was extremely close. But
yeah, it could go either way.
But I was surprised that they actually switched the call because there was no clear like angle on it. But yeah, Giannis was going hard. He actually had some really solid defensive plays, and he shut down LeBron on this one possession, which is pretty entertaining. I think the thing with a lot of people are pointing out about Giannis is he still doesn't have like a go-to move. He's still just a guy that kind of works off transition and tries to blow by you. But when people put the clamps down, like he doesn't have like a turnaround J or maybe like a post like spin to get to the bucket. He just still is working on that part of his game.
Yeah, it was kind of funny that Embiid and Giannis, both in the East, but like both pretty similar players and how the team uses them. And you could just tell that Embiid has just so much better footwork than Giannis, where Giannis just uses his physicality to get into the paint and like open lanes and ahead of steam to get dunks, or he takes 3-pointers at the top of the key, where Embiid kind of likes that ISO play where he has his back to the basket and has like really good moves. Like he juked out LeBron on his spin move.
Yeah, that was the little like dream really shake. Good.
Yeah,
dream
yeah, yeah.
Shake. That was nice. That was probably one of the nicer plays. I think what was also a pretty funny play was it was 156, like 155 or whatever it was, and James Harden drove to the bucket or was coming off a cut. He got the ball and he had a wide open layup, but he kicked it out.
Yeah. You can see LeBron after that play, kind of like after like AD gets his foul and has to shoot free throws, he's kind of like joking with Harden. If you see him out, like, why didn't you take it? Like Harden's like, like, I don't know, man. Yeah, it was just a fun kind of experience. Like the whole All-Star game was like, except for like the first three quarters, was like really fun. Like the intros with Common was really fun. Chance the Rapper's like set at halftime was pretty fun. Like the entire thing was like a lot of fun, and like Obama was there. I don't know if you saw that, but Obama was there. The intro, the Kobe stuff was really fun. The national anthem was like unique with Chaka Khan. Like it was just an entertaining thing all around.
That was a controversial dude. No one liked that national anthem performance. She was getting trashed. Oof. It was pretty rough.
With Fergie.
Yeah, well, like people are saying it's worse than Fergie. So I guess that's good for Fergie. It was just, I listened to it. Like I read about it and I was like, oh, maybe I'll listen to it. It was pretty odd. It was pretty out there.
Yeah.
I kind of prefer like a traditional performance, but a lot of people like to put their spin on it. And sometimes it's good. And in this case, it wasn't very good. So sorry for Chaka Khan. Maybe she can redeem herself later on or someone else will take the title, but she's holding that title as worst performance of the national anthem for now.
Yeah. And even though the NBA ratings are down, I thought this is one of the more entertaining. I think this has been a really entertaining season, especially since there's not like a big juggernaut like the Golden State Warriors this year, and everyone's kind of competing. No one really knows who's going to go to the finals. I think it's a really fun season, and like just watching this All-Star game kind of emphasizes that too.
Yeah, I like the All-Star game. I like the changes they made, and I look forward to it next year and maybe some other changes to the NBA season on a whole. So let's get to our new segment, Reddit reactions. We just kind of browse through either our NBA or our NFL. We're just going to take these from our NBA. So I thought this one was pretty funny. So Nick Young, Swaggy P. The story is that a fan sent Nick Young a Kobe shirt for free, and Nick Young blocks the fan and attempts to sell the shirt on his own. And there's a whole thing going on about this right now. Credit you, Pimp Squad for Life, or Pimp Squad for Life, for that story there. What do you think of that?
I think it's classic Nick Young at this point. I can't wait for Nick Young to get to the point where he's not famous enough, or just is out of the league, like, and just starts commentating and starts talking about the NBA, because he seems like a really charismatic person. And I remember back a few, like, I think he did like a podcast with Gilbert Arenas. I don't know if you remember Gilbert Arenas, but he was he's a really funny guy too. And that was a crazy, crazy Washington Wizards team. Like, they got caught for having guns in the locker room and stuff like that. And they were talking about that, like, super casually. It was all really funny. I thought, like, the guns, the quote unquote guns they brought into the locker room were like toy guns, but like, there's no way of telling by what they brought in. And they were just an absolute mess of a team that, like, Gilbert Arenas, if you don't know, he was like a really good player that got paid way too much, way too early, and kind of burnt out pretty quickly after that.
Yeah, I know who Gilbert Arenas was. He was pretty good when he was coming out. I think he had a few injuries or something like that.
Yeah, and just him, because that's where Nick Young got drafted to, the Gilbert Arenas team, essentially. And they had a lot of funny stories, and hearing them talk about their funny stories and crazy stories, like they play pranks on the teammates and stuff like that. It's just kind of fun to listen to. And Nick Young, like, what's that other podcast? Pull Up with Matt Barnes. It's pretty fun. He interviews like a lot of NBA players too. It's very charismatic the way Nick Young approaches the NBA and stuff like that.
Yeah. So, keep it coming, Nick Young. You're already in the class for one of the best gifts of all time with you taking a three-pointer, turning around, and celebrating while it bricks off the rim. So we thank you for that. Keep it coming. Keep the great stories. Just keep being wild. Keep being yourself. So another Reddit story we saw. Kawhi Leonard, I think this is his post-game interview after the All-Star game. He won MVP, by the way. Whoa. Talk about his performance in that game later, but I thought that was pretty funny. He walks up to the podium, he sees there's Gatorade on there, and then he's like kind of out of range of the mic, but you can hear him say, "Not sponsored by Gatorade." And he like takes the Gatorade bottle, like puts it down, then conducts the interview. And that was from UMass1346. So I don't know. I just think it's funny. And it's just another one of those Kawhi, like, info nuggets that we don't really get to see too often, and just I don't know, I think it's pretty funny.
Yeah, it's just kind of funny how, like, everybody takes the smallest thing Kawhi gives us because he never talks. It just turns into like a huge meme, whether it's him laughing like a lunatic, like a psychopath, where he's at the beginning of the season and he's like, hey. That was meme to death. I think during the beginning of the All-Star game, when they came out, Kawhi Leonard kind of did a little dance with one of the students from Chicago. And that was kind of funny and memed a bunch. It's just, there's such a huge cult following around Kawhi Leonard. It just makes him so much more endearing, even though we don't know very much about his personality other than he's quiet.
Yeah, keep it coming. The next few chapters of the Kawhi personality as it's slowly revealed to us over the years. We'll see. Yeah. That will bring us to our next segment. Let him eat.
He's heating up. He's got smoke coming off his fingertips. Are you kidding me? He's as hot as a blowtorch.
It's a heat check. You knew that was coming. It's heat check time.
So we got a big list here. We got Adam Silver. He switched the All-Star MVP to the Kobe MVP award. So that's pretty cool. Honor to Kobe. He obviously took the All-Star games very seriously. I think he won a few of the All-Star MVP awards. And so that's just a cool way to keep his memory going. And now I think that's why a big reason a lot of players took this game pretty seriously. They wanted to win that award. And then the format changes he made to the, it's probably not just him directly, but he's responsible for it. So format changes to the All-Star game. It kind of resulted in one of the most entertaining game in the last few years. So that's good for him. And we'll get to Kawhi Leonard, the man, the Claw himself. He won the MVP award for the All-Star game. He opened the game with back-to-back three-pointers for Team LeBron. And he tied the All-Star game record for threes and a half with seven. Brought it home with, led all scorers with 30 points. Had handed out four assists and had a few key plays down the stretch by a steal and a mid-range J that he took, which was pretty smooth. And another player from that game, Kyle Lowry, you got to shout him out. He was playing defense. He was taking charges. Easily one of the most annoying players to play in the NBA in the past few years. But shout out to you, man. You're taking the All-Star game seriously and playing like it's the finals. So that's what we love about you. And another player from the XFL. We'll go to the XFL now. PJ Walker. He plays on the Houston Roughnecks. You probably haven't heard of him yet unless you watch the XFL. There's a few of you out there, probably. I would hope so. You got to keep that league alive.
We're about to be those guys.
He's actually really exciting. He's pretty electric. He reminds me of Russell Wilson. He's 5'10", 5'11", or something like that. He had 20 of 31 passes for 170 yards, three touchdowns, and no picks. He also rushed four times for 27 yards and had a one-point conversion rush. So that's pretty cool. If you haven't checked him out, I recommend you do. He's fun to watch. So who do you want to give the stake to this week?
Oh, man. I don't know. I can't give it Kyle Lowry because he did foul Anthony Davis on the last play for the game-winning free throw. So Was it a foul, though? Hey, the refs ruled it, all right? It was a foul. And screw AD for not missing that free throw and letting the game play out.
Don't point shame him. I don't care. Don't complain about the free throw being the last shot.
It's the All-Star game.
I think if you watch that play, Embiid's like talking to him. He's like, dude, miss both these shots or something like that. He's like having a full on conversation with AD, and AD's just like laughing him off.
I mean, it would have been more entertaining. I mean, he did really just absolutely biff that first free throw, and everyone was on the edge of their seat at that point, like, please miss this, please miss this. But so I'm going to disqualify Kyle Lowry. PJ Walker, I didn't watch the XFL, so I can't give it to him. I'm sorry. But, I mean, the two heavy hitters of this week were easily Kawhi Leonard and Adam Silver. I got to give it to Adam Silver, and I feel like he's going to be on this list again, to be totally honest, because I think he's going to make some – we already talked about the game changes that he has potential to make. So I'm going to give it to Adam Silver because it was a really entertaining All-Star weekend, like all around, other than like maybe the skills challenge. But the skills challenge is hampered by its own making. It's not very entertaining anyway. But I think I got Adam Silver. Shouts out to Kobe. And a very entertaining All-Star game where people actually tried.
Yeah, I'll give it to Kawhi Leonard for his Kobe-like performance in this game. He seemed like the only guy that was actually trying and consistently getting a bucket. He had a sweet fadeaway in the fourth quarter. I actually just think they should have went to him more. He missed a couple threes, but he was the best player in that game for sure. So we'll move on and get to our weekly showdown. So we decided this a while ago. Oscars. It's still kind of in the theme for Oscars, I guess. We're going to go with Best Tarantino Film. And you got the first pick, the first draft. So what did you take for your Best Tarantino Film?
I took Inglourious Basterds. So the reason why I like Inglourious Basterds is just because it's everything Tarantino is the best at. He's best at very cinematic, like small vignettes of like scenes, like the very first scene, which is probably his most memorable scene in my opinion, where you're introduced to Christoph Waltz, the actor, and the Jew hunter. And the way he's introduced is an incredibly charismatic Nazi. And at the beginning, you very much believe he's the most charismatic person you've ever listened to. Halfway through the scene, you realize exactly how evil he can get. And he speaks in English, and he tries to weed out this guy's psyche to give up the location of these Jews. And at the end of the scene, it's absolutely fireworks. And that could be arguably not the best scene in the movie itself. And that's for me personally, the best scene in all of Tarantino's. But another scene in that movie was the bar scene. And that almost 30 minute scene is intense from the jump.
That's my favorite scene.
Yeah, from them going down there and having a fun with the other Nazi sympathizers and stuff like that, and the barkeep, and you learn the stories of everybody in the bar, and this guy has a kid, and blah 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 blah, to the point where it turns when there's an SS soldier in there, and it turns this seemingly harmless get together into a suspense thriller where it ends with one of the best quotes, where one of the spies who's British gets found out, and he finds out that he is not German, he's a spy, and because he uses the wrong three, he says one of the best and funniest lines, and he has a gun pointed at his dick, and he's like, "Do you mind if I go out speaking the kings?" And then takes a shot of whiskey or scotch or whatever and puts it down, and then ensues into one of the best Tarantino things, his exploitation, where everyone just dies. Everyone just dies. Everyone in the bar completely just gets obliterated except for one person. I think it has some of his best scenes. The movie flows cohesively from scene to scene. And the ending of it is just him essentially calling his shot, where I forget the commander's name, the Apache, we'll just call him the Apache, says, "This might be my masterpiece." And that's essentially what Tarantino is saying to himself. And so I think from front to back, it's just absolutely just straight memorable scenes and memorable quotes and just great filmmaking.
All right. Well, I think you might have went over the time limit there. We try to keep it to 1 to 2 minutes, okay? So cut it down next time. It was good. Good argument. I also love Inglourious Basterds. So my pick, I'm taking the movie that turned the movie industry on its head. It blew up in the theaters, and it really put Tarantino on the map. It's not Reservoir Dogs. It's Pulp Fiction. And that, it just shifted movie culture, and it really shaped a lot of people's minds of what a movie can be and what movie dialogue, what it can like lead to. And I just love Pulp Fiction. I also love Reservoir Dogs, but I think Pulp Fiction is just a little bit cleaner, a little bit more put together, and it has some really great performances. It is a little different in that it's not really a cohesive movie, which Bastards I think is a lot easier to follow. Pulp Fiction is more of a lot of what you said, like a lot of different vignettes that kind of tie together through a few different characters. It's endlessly quotable. It's got great scenes. It has one scene that I'm not too in love with, but I won't mention it, but it has Samuel L. Jackson going ham. He's easily steals the show. He has a lot of monologues, and it's just great. And it also has Bruce Willis. He gets a few moments to shine in his film as well. Uma Thurman is also excellent. And I just want to recap some of those scenes. Probably the best one. I don't know. There's this movie is just full of like great scenes. So one of my favorites is the diner scene where what's the other actor? He's with Samuel L. Jackson the whole time. He's Samuel L. Jackson's partner. Do you remember
John Travolta?
Him? John Travolta and Uma Thurman go to like old school burger shack, and a song comes on and they dance. And probably in most movies this wouldn't be that cool, but it was like actually cool, and just to see how they dance, and it was actually really entertaining. Another scene is Travolta and Samuel L. Jackson are basically do like a bust on these people. It was like four stoner dudes, and they shoot like three of them, and then they interrogate this guy, and Samuel L. Jackson has this great like monologue. He's like, "Are you calling me a bitch?" And then he also grabs the dude's burger, and he's like, "That's a delicious burger." I don't remember the exact words, but I just know that scene's hilarious. And then the last one was probably the diner scene. Two people like take hold of the diner and trying to hold everybody up, and unfortunate for them, they got the one bad motherfucker in the house, Samuel L. Jackson. And just the best part of that was he's like, they take everybody's wallets, and then Samuel L. walks over there and he does some badass speech, and he's like, "Okay, you're going to reach into that bag and you're going to pull out the one that says bad motherfucker on it." And then like they reach out and take it out. I don't know. It's endlessly entertaining and has some great scenes. They bring out the gimp scene with Bruce Willis and Marcellus Wallace in the end. Probably the best scene in the movie too. Just bring out the gimp. Bring him up. And then Bruce Willis takes a samurai sword, which is just Tarantino being absurd, and they cut him down. It's just great. I love it, and I probably need to rewatch it this year so I can refresh on my memories. I probably went a little long there too. I probably went like 2 or 4 minutes on that one, honestly.
It's all right. I went over too. You're allowed. The court will decide.
I know, we gotta get some way to judge this. Maybe, yeah, I don't know, we can ask Jackie or put out a Twitter poll to our two followers, which is like me and you, and we can judge on that.
It's a work in process.
Yeah. He's gotta bring him in slowly, you know. Rome wasn't built in a day. Field of Dreams wasn't built in a day.
If you build it, they will come.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Last call. We don't got too much. I do want to talk about, I got to go see a minor league hockey game this week with Jackie. We went to see the Everett Silvertips versus the Portland, was it Winterhawks, I believe?
Yeah.
And it was actually really fun. It was my first hockey game I've ever been to. I've never been too into the sport because I just don't understand a whole lot of it. But it was pretty fun to see in person. Unfortunately, there was no fights. God damn it. What the hell? Like, no fights? A lot of people there were like, "Oh, yeah, there was like 2-3 fights last time. A guy got thrown through the plexiglass." But I didn't get to see that. But yeah, it's just incredibly fast paced. There's like no timeouts. The subs like run out on the floor in a frenzy to swap out with people. It's just really cool. It's kind of like soccer in a way where it's just like no breaks. But it's even more like condensed and faster paced. Like the final score is like 4-1. The Silvertips won. And yeah, it was just a good experience. I don't know if you've ever seen any NHL or anything live, but I recommend it if you get a chance to go.
Yeah, I've been to a Winterhawks game when I was really young. I don't remember it very well, and I was like in nosebleeds. But I used to follow hockey a little bit, maybe a year and a half in college, or not in college, but in high school. And it's definitely like a really underrated game. I just don't think it's very popular in the United States. It's like the fourth most popular sport in the U.S., but it's still incredibly underrated. It's like, I don't really know what to compare it to. I guess you could compare it to like futsal. I don't know if you know what that is, but it's like indoor soccer. So it's like the same size. But it's kind of like that. But I think it's just really entertaining. If you go to the game, it's definitely a little better as a spectator than watching it on TV, in my opinion. And you can say that for a lot of things. Personally, I've been to a bunch of football games, and you could make a very strong case that football is almost as good or better on television, just watching it on television, like as a viewing experience. So I think hockey is one of the best spectator sports there is. So, and it's incredibly underrated.
Yep. Shout out to the Everett Silvertips. Good win. I think they're the number one team in the minor leagues. So that's good for them. They're gearing up for the playoffs. And we'll wrap up the show. Thank you for tuning in to the Hall of Lame podcast. If you like the show, please like, review, leave a rating on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And also follow us on Twitter at the Hall of Lame. We appreciate it. We're going to try to push out more content. If we get an audience, we would like to interact with them. So that'd be good. And tune in next week. Bye.
Foul to give for his 9/10 left. A three wins the series. It's Lillard. He got the shot off. Lillard got it. And the Blazers.